Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
So I assume you guys are having a great time. Isn't this fun? Love it, man. After 10 months or so of preparing for this with a great team of people, Six Man and my partner Mark Willis, to see you guys here having fun and the shows, and there's people everywhere having a great time, it really is what it's all about for me. So thank you guys for being here. And remember, you have one job. Just have fun. Have a good time all the time, right? So we're going to continue the fun with another episode of Talk is Jericho. Did you guys come last night? That was a great show. It's going to be even better tonight, though. Jake the Snake Roberts! He came out.
Well, my fans made it. Where's yours?
I never noticed this before. You look like Sam Elliott now. It's a good thing.
He copies me.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, man. If you're going to go for something, go for somebody who's making money.
So,
man, before we go any before we even get started, I want to tell you, I am so shocked and how well this all comes off, how smooth things go, and how gracious these people are. I've known for a long time that wrestling fans were the best fans in the world. Hell, they liked me when I couldn't stand me, you know? And there was a long time of that, but you have a special fan, so do I. She's not here tonight, though. Her name is Wendy Lynn Lavoskin, and she was booked on this tour, but at the last minute, she stayed home to give up a kidney to save somebody's life. Well, that's when it gets real, you know? And I think it's a great idea that you give her and her family a free round trip. You know, I'll mention that idea.
Sounds good to me.
I'll chip in on it, man.
No, hook it up.
Just for one. You know, get a small family.
I'll get carried away.
No. It's late. I found out from her friends that it came went ahead and came on the tour, and they told me, man, and I just last night I couldn't get that off my mind about how unselfish that was and how awesome that was. She didn't even know the person that she was giving the kidney to. But it's literally saved the girl's life, man.
Wow. Shout out to Wendy, if you're listening. Actually, you're one of the first wrestlers that I ever met. In 1987, I drove my mom's car downtown. I got in a little fender bender. I was scared to death to see you at World of Wheels. Jake the Snake Roberts, World of Wheels.
Yeah,
remember those?
Yeah.
And you signed the autograph, and it was up on my wall for years.
I got in so much trouble with them, man.
Why?
They had this guy that was signing autographs that does all these, love novels and stuff. His name is, with the real long hair, what's his name? Fabio. And I was back to back with him. And whenever I seen he was there, I told the promoter, I said, dude, if I don't outdraw that motherfucker, I'll kiss your ass, you know? And he goes, man, they're lining up for him. I'm like, really? And I went out there, and there were about 40 girls out there, you know? And he kept, you know, sometimes I might have said something loud that might have offended him or something. I didn't mean to. I didn't know he was that you know, a pussy. But I got Damien out to show my fans, and I tripped on the carpet, and it went over my head, and it went on him. And the next thing I know, I was being arrested, and there were lawyers there, and they were serious, man. Seems I fucked up his hair. But, yeah. And that was the last time, unfortunately, I worked for World of Wheels.
Did you guys do a lot of those types of signings back then? Because your schedule was nuts.
Yeah, so. I love those things, man. That was such easy money. I mean, they give you a handful of money to do one, and you went and signed for 2 hours. Unless you're a jerk like me, you know, then I'll just sit there as long as I want to, you know. I mean, I just can't get up and walk out. I mean, if I've got like 75 people left, I'm going to stay, man. What the hell, you know? It's only right, man. I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, I think you're all mentally but, you know, you're going to stand in line 2 hours to listen to my bullshit? You fucking idiot. You know? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say idiot.
But you were super popular when you talk about 80s WWF. Obviously, Hogan was on top, and there's a couple of those, but everybody knew Jake the Snake.
Yeah.
Seriously, I remember the first time I ever met a friend of mine, a lifelong friend at this point, but we had first met. You like wrestling? Yeah, I like wrestling. DDT, Jake the Snake, DDT. Everybody knew that. What was it like at that time frame? What were you like at that point in time? Was there ever a chance for you to be the top baby face in the company?
Not as long as Hogan was there.
Right.
It was such an eye-opening experience to go from, you know, I'd already been in the business for many years, and you know, I'd had my $20 payoffs, and you know, you've had a few of those, I'm sure, and overpaid, and you know, but you know, I had my rough times, and to go from driving 2,500 miles a week and wrestling 7 days and being paid, you know, on a great week, 1,500, to flying to 9 different cities because you work twice on Saturday, twice on Sunday, and get a check for $15,000.
For how much?
$15,000.
$15,000.
And it was like, are you sure? You know, they don't cash that. They screwed up. They screwed up. It's got to be $1,500. You know, but it wasn't, man, because at the time it was so hot. It did not matter where we went. It was sold out. You know, Sacramento, L.A., San Diego, just sell out, sell out, sell out. But if it wasn't sold out, everybody's like, oh, my God, what's happened? You know, the sky's falling, the sky's falling. But and to go from, you know, I was known in Louisiana because I'd been there for many years off and on. But then when you went to the WWE, man, all of a sudden they know you in Albany, New York, Tampa, Florida, Canada, you know, Europe, Mexico, everywhere. And the airports became a problem because the fans would bombard you in the airports, you know. And it was good for me for a while because I got away with it, but because I just kind of dressed down. But then the hair started really showing up, and maybe the snakeskin boots and stuff had something to do with it. But, you know, sometimes you have to go for it because, hey, you might get bumped up to first class, you know. And cheap-ass Vince. Anyway. You know, but And then Rick Rude came along. Well, Rick and I, we had a long career, you know, together. I knew him before he got started. And in fact, he bled all over my living room one time and ruined a couch. And he was just visiting, you know. That was back in the days when I was in Georgia Championship Wrestling, and somebody had suckered him out in the parking lot, man. And then they beat the dog out. He stole all of his jewelry and cut him. And he ruined everything. But then I got him a job real quick and got him out of my house, you know. I did that to two guys. I got Rick Rude a job, got him booked, and then my son of a bitch and animal, the Road Warrior, he has another buddy come down. Now, the second buddy had some real issues. It seems that he was about to get married, okay? And 2 days before he gets married, he catches his soon-to-be wife with the best man. And he may have snapped, right? So he came to Atlanta because he was contemplating suicide, murder, and all sorts of stuff. So he fit in perfectly with us. And we just let him roll for a while. But man, he started driving me nuts. He started throwing all my damn dash trays out of the house, you know? And I don't really care about the ashtray, but sometimes I'll put a bud in there, you know? Or a rock, and you know, did I say it out loud? Those were the days. Anyway, so I wound up getting him a job, and he'd never put on a pair of wrestling tights. And I got him a job. Not only did I get him a job, but he went right into the main events in Mid-Atlantic.
What was it?
Well, how about Nikita Koloff? Yeah. And from the last time that I seen him work, he still hadn't learned. You know?
You mentioned being with Hogan as the top baby.
Oh,
face.
Yeah, man.
So obviously you're not going to get past that.
Well, I just wanted to work with the guy, you know, because that's when you got paid. You know.
So explain that.
Well, in the WWF, they got levels. Okay, the champ gets the most money. Okay, I dig it. I understand. Then the Intercontinental champ. But if you're wrestling the champ, you get the same money. So that's a damn good thing. Well, you sorry son of a bitch in wrestling fans. I don't know what I ever did to y'all, but y'all really screwed me on this one. We shot the angle to wrestle Hulk Hogan in Phoenix. I DDT'd him on the snake pit, and I go to the back, and Vince is like, stand right here, Jake. This is going to be awesome. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be beautiful. In about 30 seconds, they'll start chanting, Hulk, Hulk, Hulk. He'll come to his feet. He'll rip his shirt off, and you guys are going to be making money for the next year. I'm like, fuck. So 15 seconds. 30 seconds, 45 seconds, and then Hulk gets up without them chanting, and then they started chanting, but DDT, DDT. And Vince looked at me and he goes, you're screwed. He allowed me to wrestle him twice. Once was Providence, Rhode Island. We set a record there. And then in Montreal, at the Forum, the old Forum, we wrestled there and sold it out, man. And Vince says, it's not happening again because the fans were split chanting DDT.
It was hurting him as a babyface to work with you.
I understood it whenever he put it out there, but I didn't have to like it. The bottom line is, I get it. It's all about business. And he's got $10 million invested in Hulk's merchandise. And he's got 52 cents invested in mine, you know? And he didn't want to get stuck with Hulk shit, so that's when they decided I had to be a babyface, and that way I could get the heels ready for Hulk. Because that way I would... See, back then they were running three towns a night. two major towns than the C team, which was You've Been in Trouble. I made that one quite a bit. But I would wrestle, let's say, in Philly against Bad News Brown, and he would beat me, and then the next time in Philly, him and Hulk would wrestle. Well, that's okay. I mean, I still got the major city. That's a good rub. But, you know, it could be a little bit nicer with this money thing, man. You know what I'm saying? My bitch was, if I'm going to be on fourth, now you know from being up there, you could be fourth on the card, but then they change the numbers up, and you're on last. I was last every friggin' night. Every night. But I was being paid as a third match.
Right.
And that just kind of hurt, man. And I brought it up two or three times. It didn't do me any good, you know? You know how Vince McMahon is. You know, it's his game, man. He owns all the pieces, and you got to play.
As Pat Patterson used to say, it's his ice cream shop. Sometimes he likes chocolate, sometimes he likes vanilla, but he owns the f***ing shop. What are you going to do?
What are you going to do? Yeah, I questioned him one time on merchandise about, you know, how things were being counted because, you know, I had a sister, half-sister that wrestled up there, Rockin' Robin, and she was banging the merchandise guy, right? I didn't set her up to do that. She did it on her own. You know? But I would hang out with him, and I'd ask the guy, I'd say, hey, how many shirts do I sell tonight? He goes, oh, man, you sell out every night. I said, well, how many do you sell? He goes, well, they send them in a box of 100. Okay, that's all right. Well, then I'd get my count out and say, Baltimore, 7 shirts. Are you serious? New York, Madison Square Gardens, 15 shirts. You did good that night, Jake. You know? So I went to Vince and I'm like, Vince, about this counting of the shirts, man, I said, something smells here. He says, Jake, it's right there in black and white. I said, well, maybe I need to talk to the guy that's counting. He said, well, that won't really help you. I'm like, why not? Jake, that money you got, if you don't want it, give it back, but you'll never get any more. Okay. You know, there could be a lot of things different in this old world. And he could do a lot of things different too. But you know, I am so grateful for what I did get and the opportunity to display my wares because I had so much damn fun, man. I mean, you know, I'm one of those guys that really didn't give a shit about how much I was making. I just wanted to keep doing it, you know? I mean, I know when I had my neck messed up, they told me I'd never, ever wrestle again because I had 2 discs that were completely gone. And all the surgeons says, no way in hell you're going back in that ring. I'm like, hey, you have no idea, Doc. It's a chemical world now. And I went to Amsterdam after the surgery and picked up a few products. And came back, and at the time of the surgery, I could lift like 4 pounds with my left arm. That was it. I couldn't hardly lift my left arm at all. And somehow, within like 10 weeks, I was doing seated behind the neck presses with 225. And I gained a lot of size. And here's the best part, though. I gained like 40 pounds, man, in 3 months. I was like, so I went in to see Vince to tell him I was coming back. And he almost took a bump out of his chair when he said, what the hell's wrong with you? What do you think, Vince? And he looks at me and goes, Jake, what the hell have you done to yourself? I said, my God, I'm in the best shape of my life. Look at this shit, man. I mean, I had big knobs up here on my shoulders and shit. He says, Jake, if we wanted Hogan to carry the snake, we'd have Hogan carry the snake. He said, we wanted some slimy, no good son of a bitch to carry the snake. You know, a guy that looks like he's been run through the mill and a little nasty and dirty and a flesh-eating bastard. Well, thank you, sir, I think, you know. He told me, he says, if I find out that you're in a gym, I'm finding you $1,000 every time. So, I did the right thing. No, I did not. I stayed at home and drank by the pool. But I did up my cocaine use quite a bit. And I should have paid the $1,000 because I saved more money.
When you're talking about Vince, and obviously we all have great relationships with him, Jake the Snake. Snake, was that his gimmick? Your idea?
God, no, I was Jake the Snake Roberts long before I went up there.
So it's rare that he would allow you to have that
exactly.
name there.
Yeah.
What was his mindset on that?
Didn't have a choice, you know. I mean, it was a great idea, you know, no doubt. And, no, I came up with that idea like in 1978 or 79.
Did you have a snake with you?
No, okay. Nobody let me do it. You know, in Bill Watts' terms, he says, Jake, this is not a goddamn circus. Bullshit. You got Junkyard Dog up there, man. You know? You got Junkyard Dog, you got this cowboy Bill Watts, and you don't call this a circus?
So when you first had to start using the snake,
oh man,
was it the same snake
horrible.
All the time?
No. You know, folks, I'm such a liar. I hate snakes.
Wow.
I am terrified of snakes.
Really?
I swear to God. I will piss myself faster than you. I will. But it's a crazy thing, man. You know, it's Chris, you're in that locker room and you're sitting there and your body feels like shit maybe, and maybe you've got a hangover, you don't feel good, or your wife's been beating your ass or something. But when that bell rings, boom, you're Jericho. Same thing here. I'd be back there in the back looking at that bag going, motherfucker, I don't want to do this shit. And they'd ring the bell and it's, and I grab it, throw it on my back, you know, go in there, do the thing, get the snake out, put it on the guy, come out of the ring, hold it up in front of the people. I'll tell y'all about that in a minute. You can really hate my ass. And then I'd go to the back and as soon as I went through that curtain, goddamn, get that off of me. Yeah. Now, you guys remember when I used to hold a snake above my head? I'm going to tell you why. I learned something that when you hold the snake above your head, you can feel the snake contracting. Now, what that means is he's fixing to spray shit. Because snakes spray like a skunk does. They do.
Really?
It's the nastiest, filthiest smelling stuff, and it don't wash off. So whenever I'd get that snake and I'd pull it above my head, I'd have that tail, I'd have like a water faucet. And I'd go, And the fans would be cheering, going, oh, look, the snake's hissing. And then I'd watch the filter down the... And that's when I usually got my nut.
Now you're talking about the 80s. I feel bad for that poor snake. Were you ribbing with the snake?
Oh my God.
That poor thing.
It sucked, man. You know, the guy tells me, he goes, Jake, don't worry about it. Just put it in a bathtub. I'm like, really? He goes, yeah, put it in a bathtub. Turn some warm water on, not hot. You don't want to scald him. Okay. Get about 4 inches in there and cut it off. I'm like, okay, is that it? He goes, yeah. And I said, he'll stay in there? Oh, no, he's not going to stay in there. Well, you know, what does that mean the rest of the night? Well, he's going to be going where he wants to. Well, not if I got the door shut. Well, be sure to shut the door because you don't want him to kill you in your sleep. You're right, I don't. And so... Let me tell you what happened, man. I'm dreading this shit, man. And actually, the first couple of nights, I didn't even lay it out of the bag. I said, you know. Then I started feeling a little guilty. So I dumped him out in the tub. I turned the water on, done the thing, turned it off. Boom, shut the door, go in, lay down. Just as I'm about to go to sleep, I hear the water running again. What the hell? I must be hearing shit. That's from next door. Yeah. And then I hear, kabam! What the fuck? I jump up and steam comes flying out of the door. And evidently he had wrapped himself around the hot water and turned it on. And then he scalded his ass. And then he shot up the wall, got on the shower curtain, broke it off.
Oh my gosh.
It hit the sink, which broke the sink too. And that hot water's on, and that motherfucker had his mouth open and was striking at me already, so I just shut the fucking door. Left the water running. So, about an hour later, I called the front desk and said, look, my snake has broke the sink, you know, and they're like, sir, we don't have time for this foolishness. All right. So I guess about 2:30 or 3, they were beating on my door. It seems that the floor below me was getting a lot of water. And they opened the door and, goddamn, there is a snake in there. And I just thought, no. How'd that happen? And you're like, it's not yours? Hell no, I don't know a snake.
So you actually had to travel with the snake?
Every fucking place, man.
So
if I went home, I had to take it home with me. Oh yeah, here's a funny one for you. Not really, but, well, what? Yeah, not really. I take the wife out shopping, you know, after you've been gone for a couple of months, the first thing they want to do is spend your money, you know. At least mine did. And we came back from shopping, and as we pull up in the driveway, she reaches up, and just as she pushes that damn button, I go, don't do it! Because I seen the snake had gotten out, and he was hanging in the garage door on that, all that chain and shit.
Yeah.
And now once the door starts going, it won't stop till it hits something. Or it gets to the end, and I'm watching this snake be rolled up in that chain and stuff, and it's slapping the walls, and blood's coming out and shit. They don't bullshit. Y'all didn't have to fight that sumbitch like I did to get him down. It took me about 3 hours to get that snake loose, man. He bit me twice that day.
So
that
shit
hurts.
Do you keep him in a cage if you're on the plane, or how do you travel
on the plane? On the plane, all you do is you put him in that bag you guys always seen, in a trunk, and then put a blanket in there and shut it. You know, back then they didn't have the TSA thing.
So you would check the snake?
No. There was once that I was in Minneapolis and I was trying to make a connection. You know how big that airport is there?
Huge.
And I'm hustling trying to make connection, man. And somebody keeps paging me. I'm like, okay, one of the guys is playing funny shit. Ha ha, I'm not stopping. Well, I get about, I don't know, 50 yards from the gate, and I hear people start saying, there he is, there he is. And these red coats are coming after me, Delta Airlines. I'm like, it's not my dope, man. It's not mine. What? Oh, nothing, sir. I'm sorry. I'm playing a joke on you. Well, and they're like, come over here. And they take me over to the window, and they go, is that yours down there? God damn, he's mad, ain't he? And he was mad because that tarmac gets really hot. That tarmac gets really hot, and he was striking at these poor guys that are trying to reach in and grab him and shit. And they're like, is that yours? I'm like, well, yeah. Well, you need to go down there and get that. I'm like, no, I don't. What do you mean? I'm like, man, let me tell you something, dude. I said, that was in a locked trunk. And he was inside another bag It was tied in a knot. That snake ain't no Houdini. So somebody got nosy and wanted to find out what was in my luggage. Well, now they found out. And now y'all can put that up. And it was funny watching the guys, the red coat guy, he said something on a little microphone, and you look down there, and there's a guy in a blue coat down there. He says something, and then he goes over and taps another guy, and they just pass it right down. And finally, you got, you know, Jeremy Joe over there with a broom sweeping with his headphones on, and they tap him on the shoulder, and you see him doing this, and he walks off.
Tell me some of the angles that you did with the snakes, classic stuff. Oh, yeah. With Andre, who was scared of skates, snakes, the Savage, classic Savage. Did the cobra really bite him?
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Tell us about Vince's pitch of this and how you and Randy dealt with it.
Well, it was suggested, and I'm all for it. You know,
and the angle was that the cobra is literally going to bite
Macho
Randy
Man.
Savage, Macho Man.
And the Macho comes to me and goes, so you're ever going to do a little something special tonight, huh? I'm like, yeah, bro, it's going to be f***ing awesome, man. I said, it's going to be really cool, bro. He's like, let me ask you something. What's that, Randy? Are you absolutely sure that snake's been fixed?
That's great, by the way. That's great. That's Macho Man.
What do you mean fixed, man? I said, he's got the venom sacs have been removed. They've been filled with silicone. He goes, maybe they have and maybe they haven't. Stranger things have happened in the WWF. I'm like, what are you trying to say? Brother, I'm trying to say maybe you are like the rest of these f***ing jackoffs around here. Everybody wants to take the Macho Man's Intercontinental Heavyweight Championship belt. And I'm like, no, bro. I ain't doing that bullshit. He goes, let me say this. You need to let that snake bite you first. I'm like, f*** you, man.
Really?
Yeah. I'm like, f*** you, you know? In a nice way, you know? Not being disrespectful. I said, dude, I ain't doing that shit. He goes, if you're not gonna do that, then you and I are gonna have to do a little fighting right now. And this guy starts ripping his shit off, and he's squaring up on me. I'm like, are you serious? Goddamn right I am, you know. And now he picks up a chair, and he slings it. Come on. I'm like, whoa, right here, man. You're a psycho. So I went over, and I got the bag out, and I pulled my pant leg up, and slapped the snake a little bit, and stuck my leg out there, and he bit my leg, and so he bites it, and I jerk him off of it, and Randy's like, okay, don't you dare move. Don't take no elixirs. Don't take no antidotes. Don't drink nothing. Don't take no pills. Don't touch nothing. I'm going to sit right here and watch you f***ing die. And, after about 20 minutes, he's like, he looks at me and goes, did that screw you with your head? I'm like, yeah, but not near as much as you are. And he's like, well, I guess it's okay then. He goes, I tell you what, listen to me real close. You know, we're going to make some great money with this idea. But, after the snake lets go, you bring him back to me. Because I may want you to hook him up again because I want to be sure it's done right. I'm like, no problem. So in the match, I tie him in the ropes and I get the snake out and I turn my back to him so he doesn't see me do it. I knock the dog shit out of that snake.
To piss him off.
Oh, God, yeah. And as soon as I hammered him, he went, ah, you know, and I didn't even get close to him. He was like leaning over trying to get to his arm. I'm like, damn, man. And now he bites him, and I'm like. And so I grab it, and I'm like, oh, goddamn. And I do it two or three times, man, and I'm pulling him back, and he won't let go. And I'm like, holy shit, man. I'm like, I don't know what to do. I ain't no snake.
Not letting go.
No, I'm not no snake fixer, you know. And now Vince is tripping out. He sends Piper to ringside. Well, Piper's deathly afraid of snakes. So Piper's standing about where these people are back there going, get the snake off of him. Vince said so. Tell Vince I'm trying. And about 20 more seconds go, and he sends Elizabeth. And Elizabeth came right down to ringside because it was easy because Piper's right behind her pushing. I swear to God. And Jake, Vince said, now they're about to riot. No shit, I'm waiting for the first one, you know. Because you know how it is in the ring, man. As long as the people are screaming and everything, we feel pretty safe. But if it goes dead quiet, that means there's something missed. Yeah. And it had gotten quiet because people had ran out of, kids had run out of tears from crying and shit. And that was so awesome, though, man. And
What did Randy
well,
say?
Well, I finally had to spread his mouth open like a lion, you know. I pried his mouth open, and he got him off of it. But then I remember what he said. So I picked the snake up and walked back over to, hey, Rick, get that mother away from me. Gotcha. That's my favorite moment, by the way. Yeah.
I call
that my wood moment.
I had an angle about 10 years ago with Shawn Michaels that went about 9 or 10 months. And my analogy was like, I want this to be a long angle like Jake the Snake and Rick Rude. You guys worked for about a year.
Yeah, man.
Which in this day and age, angles come and go and stories come and go so fast. That to me is still, what a year.
It was easy, man. And it could still be done.
How was it easy for you, though, for you guys?
Less is more. Okay? You people deserve and should be entertained. But that doesn't mean that I got to tell you 10 stories. We got to take time to breathe every now and then. And I'm sure you fans wouldn't mind if these guys breathed a little bit more. Because here's the bottom line, Chris. Because I argued it with Vince, and I've argued it with everybody. If I am connected with these fans emotionally, I own them.
You own them?
I own them. I can make them stand up. I can make them sit down. I can make them bark. I can make them love me. I can make them hate me. Okay? You do that with the psychology of the whole thing. And when we rush through things, we're cheating them out of the emotional tie-ins. It's no different in the movies today. You can watch, you know, Die Hard 26, where dogs are raping humans and the world's ending and all this. Or you can turn on John Wayne threatening to pick up the gun. The thing is, you believe John Wayne was going to kill that son of a bitch. Because John Wayne was USA, and that's just it. So we need to just reel it back a little bit, man. The athletes today are so phenomenal. You know, much better athletes than we were. And, of course, they're not working near as hard as we did.
Or as much.
Yeah, that's the thing, man. I wrestled Ricky Steamboat 93 days straight.
Yeah. Yeah. Hold on. 93 days straight.
Over 3 months.
Every night.
Twice on Saturday, twice on Sunday.
And we heard this before?
And when we did television back then, we did three tapes one day and three tapes the next day. So that meant that day, that week, you were working 14 times. And the rest of the time,
you're
working.
And that's when you talk about the 80s and we talk about, oh, there's drugs and this, that, whatever. You guys, if I worked 93 days in a row, I'd be f***ed up crazy,
yeah,
too.
Man. Well, I did some steroids at the time just to help my body heal. You know, that's the reason steroids were first invented, by the way. It was to help our soldiers heal that were coming home from the internment in the camps in Germany and Japan, because they didn't want the American public to see these soldiers weighing 100 pounds. So they'd give them the steroids and put them on a slow boat home. And by the time they got home, they gained 40 pounds, 30 pounds. They didn't look like death march people. You know, that's why it was invented, is to help heal. But, you know, you can overuse anything, man. You know, you can have too much sex, from what I've read. I've never had a problem with it. I've never gotten to that limit. I seem to blow up first and just roll over.
But when we talk about both Rude and Roberts, we still remember, like, him having your wife at the time, Cheryl's face on his tights. Yeah. Like, that's stuff that you never forget. Like that, like you mentioned, emotional connection
tie
to 30 years later. I still remember this.
Yeah. And see, it's the same today. You know, you don't disrespect a man's wife. If I had not went out there and ripped those tights off of him,
right, then
I would have been the phony. Because Rick was going out to the ring. I said, Vince, if he goes through that curtain, I'm going out there to rip him off. He goes, no, Jake, don't worry about it. Bullshit. Because if you ask me to do that, I'm not Jake the Snake anymore. Sometimes you got to do things to keep your character straight, whether they like it or not. Now, what you got to do is, though, you got to be smart enough to do it in such a way that you're not doing this to them. So, like one time he wanted me to, I was going to be wrestling Survivor Series, and it was me, Hogan, and Demolition. So he says, Jake, we've got this great idea. It's going to be so visual. Here's what we want to do. Can you get a snake that is big enough that Hulk could carry the head, Demolition could carry the middle, and you could carry the end? And I'm like, Vince, I mean, I get the visual effect you're looking for there, man, but isn't that kind of screwing with my gimmick? No, Jake, come on, it's television. Okay, I'll call Albert and see what I can do. So I call Albert, my psycho, sicko snake handler. So Albert, they're screwing with the gimmick. And Albert, man, he was a real psycho. He was like Charles Manson revisited. And this guy was, he was out there. But I said, Albert, they're messing with the gimmick. They're wanting to pick up big snake, and everybody's going to hold up. You can't let everybody else touch it. Only you, Jake. Only you. And I said, good, we're on the same page. See, can you get a snake that is big enough for all four guys to carry it, and maybe a little too big? Done. So I forgot about it. And 3 weeks later, we're at Richfield Coliseum. And you know how they time you to go do your procession to the ring? You know, they want to time everything out so everybody knows how much time it takes for to announce these four guys, and they go to the ring. So Vince is like, Jake, where's Albert at? I said, oh, I see him earlier. We need to find him. Okay, I found him. I said, Albert, Vince wants the snake. He goes, he's in that crate. What crate? That one. I'm like, oh, my God. Couldn't you get a bigger box? No, I had to cram him in that one. Cram him in that one? This box was from here to there in a square and this tall. I'm like, Albert, he's like, oh my God. So he gets the pry bar and starts prying the nails out of it. And he gets about a little over halfway. And then all of a sudden, that box went flying in the air, and this son of a bitch came out. Holy Jesus, holy Jesus. The head of this snake, this is no lie, this big could swallow a human like that.
Is it a boa constrictor?
375 pounds. Anaconda.
Anaconda, wow.
Anaconda. The middle of it was about this
big. Huge.
And it was amazing at how fast Hogan could move. And of course, this monster comes out, and Albert, I'm like, God damn, Albert. And Albert takes off running and jumps and lands on the snake. The snake picks him up and then slams him to the floor. Split his skull. He's out. And I'm gone. And everybody else was too, and Vince is going, get that goddamn thing out of here. Yeah, as soon as Albert gets up, you know. Yeah, that snake was like 26 feet long. Yeah, it was.
The fact that it exists is scary.
Oh, yeah. What, no, Albert actually showed me a picture of the snake swallowing a horse. Yeah. Yeah, and he had the head and the front legs down. Yeah, man.
Let me ask you a question away from snakes. Yeah. It's something that I want to talk to you about.
Good.
When you think about Jake Roberts as a promo, one of the greatest promos of all time, and I would say that if you weren't here, the art of the promo to bring people into the arena to get them to watch the pay-per-view, whatever, you're one of the best, man, because it's real for you, it's real for me to watch you talk.
You know it. I'm going to let you in on a little secret, but it's not really a secret, man. To do a promo right, you have to believe what you're saying. Okay? So the first thing you never do is you never say something that you can't do in that match. Like, you should never say, I'm going to kill you. Okay.
Agreed. I hate that.
Where are you burying your people, asshole? Yeah. I'm going to jerk your eyeballs out and swallow them. How many have you done so far? I mean, because you destroy that, and once you destroy that with a fan, you're mush, okay? So you got to keep it real. Now, the other thing is, you don't look at the camera, you look through it. When you talk to a fan, if you're cutting a promo on somebody, you don't look at them, you look through them. And you can pull that out of you. Here's how I learned. When I was a kid, I was being sexually abused. And when you're a kid and that stuff's happening to you, you learn to lie because your life is on the line. You know what I'm saying? I mean, and you got to learn to read people because you want to be able to read that person to see what kind of mood they're in. What can I say that's going to keep her from doing what she does? And how can I get out of this unscathed? And I think that I gained a lot of my wrestling ability from having to deal with that. When your nuts are on the line, brother, you're going to get a promo out there that makes them believe what you're saying. And that's the whole thing about a promo. You got to say it and believe it. You know, I mean, Vince used to really challenge you, you know, because he would have you doing stupid stuff sometimes, you know, like the Bad News Brown and the sewer rat from hell. My God, we took that angle down south. There wasn't a southerner in the building that did not know what that sewer rat was. It was a possum spray painted black. But I still had to do that promo and believe, you know.
I did a promo once. I can't remember what it was for. I did the promo and Vince went, one take, done. One take, Jake.
Yeah.
That's from you.
Yeah.
It took me a while to figure that out. I thought one take, Jake, at Ryan's. But wait a minute. A couple weeks later, did you say one take, Jake, because of Jake Roberts? Oh, yeah. One take. That's all I needed. Yeah.
They used to challenge me. You know, back in those days, we were doing 70 or 80 interviews back to back. And
for local towns, for the towns.
Yeah, because with Vince,
we're coming to Atlanta. We're coming to Dallas. Blah blah blah.
Yeah, you had to. And Howard Finkel was getting a nut because he got to watch and pick which ones he liked. Howard, they're all good. Stop it, you know. But that was his job, so he, you know, he took, yeah, anyway. But I would get bored doing them. And I'd say, okay, man, I said, you guys got to help me out, man. I said, y'all just give me a word and I'll take off with it, you know. And they might say, spaghetti. And I'd just do a promo and talk about spaghetti, and I was the meatball bitch, and you know, and I'm gonna whip that sauce up right, baby, and feed you good. You know, and the best interview I ever done, I didn't say anything. I looked at the camera, I said, guys, let this go. And I looked at the camera and I started going, and the sound guy's, Jake, we're not getting it. God damn it, man, do it again. So we did it again. And so after about 30 seconds, I went, now, go ahead and look at that kid sitting next to you and tell him that I can't make you get up and fix a television that's not broken. Because I made you get your fat ass up and gotta awesome. Fix a television just by looking at you. And you know,
that's awesome.
You got to keep it simple, Chris. You know, people don't want to have to figure some bullshit out where it's a 13-year documentary from the sci-fi Fernum Durnum. No. Give me some eggs over easy with a biscuit and some gravy and two slices of bacon. You know, I'm sorry, Dallas. I'm eating the gluten, you know.
That's great. That's genius. As we start to wind down here, I want to talk about the DDT. I don't know. I'd never seen it before as a 16-year-old wrestling fan, but I didn't watch lots of tapes and stuff. Where did you find? Did you invent the move? Did you see somebody do it? Where did it come from?
I invented that by accident.
How?
I had a front face lock on a fella, you know, with his head in here. And back then, I was using a knee lift for a finish. So during
what?
A knee lift.
Okay.
For a finish. So I got him in a front face lock and he crams me into the corner once and I fight him back out into the middle of the ring. He crams me in again. Boom, I almost let go, but I fight him back out in the middle again. Now finally the third time, boom, I release. But then as he staggers back, I catch him with a short knee lift. I dive on him across the ring, but he got his foot on the rope. One, two, all the foot's on the rope. So it was a high spot. So one night, I had the guy, and we're doing that, and as I hooked the head and he went to push me, he stepped on my foot and made me fall. Well, at the time, I was a baby face, so I sprang to my feet like, hey, that wasn't me, that guy made
nothing
me
happened.
Trip. Yeah.
You know, I didn't see that.
That wasn't me, you know, and foul, and but the other guy, he stayed down, and I'm like, whoa, because I'm listening to the people and they're like, oh, it took their breath away. That's a good thing. So after that, I started working on it. And, you know, the whole key to the thing is to shoot the left leg through. A lot of guys hook the guy and they hop. Oh, God, I hate that. But if you take the left leg back and then you sling it as hard as you can, that gives you the speed and it drives them flat. And it's sweet, but you can't do it on concrete.
But here's the thing about that, though. Like, as wrestlers, as performers, we want to always try and create something that will last forever. Like, if you chop somebody, people always go, woo. The DDT, it's like, okay, I'll do it, I'll tackle, I'll give you a DDT. Like, it's just a commonplace thing.
Yeah.
Let's think back to you inventing it and coming up with this name, which I want to ask you about that. It's now a move that you created, and 1,000 years when both of us are gone, they'll still be calling DDTs.
Yeah, and hopefully somebody will sell it. You know? But, hold on. People ask me all the time, hey, Jay, don't you get pissed off when you see these guys using the DDT? No, I don't. You know why? Because each time they do it, they're just telling you, hey, goddamn, Jake Roberts did it and you didn't get up.
Right.
Now, Jake must be a bad motherfucker.
Right, right.
That's it, man. Now, the name came from, I picked up a USA Today newspaper one morning after we invented it, and the U.S. government was outlawing DDT. And DDT at the time was a thing they sprayed on the plants and stuff.
Insecticide or something?
Yeah. Insecticide is dichlorothorum 9-ethanol. It's like 26 letters, you know? And I'm like, wow. And the reason they were outlawing it was because it was poison to the brain. I'm like, yeah. Yeah, I took that one. Yeah. I like that.
But it's also so easy to chant.
Oh, DDT, yeah, absolutely.
DDT, to the point where a DDP told me he took Diamond Dallas Page.
Yeah.
Because you could do DDP the same way that you could do DDT.
Yeah.
Well, very smart move.
He had a couple good ideas. Man. Yeah, he stole a couple.
Who were some of your favorite opponents over the years?
Len Denton.
Len Denton, wow.
Len Denton.
The grappler from Portland, Oregon.
Yeah. That's who I invented the DDT with. Ronnie Garvin.
Really?
Oh, my God.
Was he good as an opponent?
Oh, my God. It was a street fight. In fact, if it had been a street fight, I would have given up two or three times. Goddamn right they were. Whew. He would jack you up. And I'll tell you a funny one on Ronnie Garvin. Now, Ronnie and I don't know, Chris, if you're like this, I like to feel it, you know?
You want it strong
do.
Style.
I want it solid. If I don't feel it, I don't, no, you know? And Ronnie was all about that. And so we punished each other quite a bit. In fact, we had a strap match that people were getting out of the first two or three rows and moving because they were getting blood all over them because we were laying it in. And I would beat the hell out of Ronnie Garvin, and I'd look down at him. Nope, he's not coming up yet. You know, and certain guys would do certain things right before they make their comeback, you know. Ronnie had something that would happen with him right before he would make his comeback, and I'd know that he was coming up right then. And what it was his nipples would get hard. I seen him about 6 months ago after many years of pondering that. And I said, Ronnie, bro, I got to ask you something. And he says, what's that, Jake? I said, how come your nipples got hard right before you made a comeback? And he's like, oh, get out of here. No, Ronnie, I'm serious. Now I'm really scared, you know. Ronnie, he would stomp a mud hole in your ass, man. And, I just loved the guy to death, man. I had so much respect for him, you know, because he was solid and because, you know, here I was a young punk compared to him, and he was letting me lead him. And, I was booking Georgia Championship Wrestling at the time, which here's some great news for all you guys. I've got a book that'll be out in a couple of months. And it's finished, and it's going to press, but I'm doing it all myself, so I'm going to take an extra week or so here. But the good news is there's about 500 pages, and that gets you through half of my career. Because it is an in-depth book. It's not just about me going there and wrestling so-and-so. No, there's a lot of backstory and thinking to it and reasons why and some heavy stuff, man. I think you're really going to dig it, you know. And if you don't, just keep your f***ing mouth shut and don't say anything. Stop it.
Last question for you, and you've had such a long career. What is your favorite match or matches? Is the one that stands up for you?
No, man. you know what it's like, Chris. I mean, each night that I was out there, it was the greatest time of my life. Everything that I struggled with in my life never touched what I did in the ring. Because no matter what I was going through in my life at the time, when I got in that ring, that was my time. In the ring's time. And I could do whatever I wanted and present whatever I wanted. To me, wrestling a match was like making love. Except I never cheated on the ring. I'm not happy about that, okay? Don't even get me started there. It's in the book, and you'll definitely understand it. I hope you understand it. I dipped the wick in way too many places, man, you know? And all that did is cheat me out of a real relationship and a real love affair, you know? And the only real love affair I've ever had in my life has been with this ring, you know? And I miss so much.
Yeah.
Sorry, I walked off with your question. But as far as great, I mean, how do you not say Andre the Giant? Being in the ring with Andre the Giant, are you kidding me?
Tell us about
what
that.
What in the hell was I doing? Why do you friggin' fans hate me so much that you want the Giant to eat me? Because, you know?
He was a great worker, too.
Oh, he was phenomenal. I mean, if he liked you. If he did not like you, run for your life. Macho could not outrun him.
did Andre like you?
He loved me.
Yeah.
And I got that because the very first time we wrestled, he guzzled me to the point he didn't hardly let me up off the mat. And I was so hurt and angry because I thought so much about what I can do for this guy. Because Andre at the time, his body was breaking down on him. So I didn't knock him off his feet because it was hard for him to get up. Right. If a guy can't get up, don't expose a guy's weakness. Never expose your opponent's weakness. Elevate everything there is about him. So he knew that I didn't do that shit, and here he just guzzles me. But what he's doing, he was challenging me to see if I would stand up. And I could not believe I did it. And after I did it, I punched myself a couple of times really hard. You dumbass, you know. Because I kicked the dressing room door open and started screaming at him. And to the point that both the agents ran out of the room. Not because they were scared of me, because they ran right by me. But they just figured Andre was going to tear me apart.
Scared of the boss.
And I just said, you sorry mother. Why would you do that? I wanted a chance to make money with you, man. I'll bust my ass for you and I'll do the right things, man. Why did you do that to me? Just wanted to see.
Wanted to see what?
He wanted to see if I'd stand up for the right thing. Hmm. You know, Andre loved this business, you know. And he was having to see people come up and get opportunities that didn't deserve it. Sometimes he was even asked to do things for people that didn't deserve it. And because he was professional, he went ahead and did them. But wrestling was all he had. This was all he had, man. And it was all of his joy. You know, he had a tough life. And people were very rude to him and ugly to him and never had a private moment. You know, and I miss him. I miss playing cards with him. We used to play cards every night, man. We played crazy eights. You know, we'd play cribbage. A quick story about that. I'm playing him cribbage at WrestleMania 3. All right. At WrestleMania 3, he had been asked to come to the office to discuss the finish of his match with Hogan 5 times. And each time he stood him up.
You what?
He stood him up. And Vince finally says, Andre, what is going on? I don't know, Vince. I'm thinking I like the title. What? Andre, you can't be serious. No, I like this. You make the new belt. I don't want you to waste your money. And it feels good and I get respect. Let me think about it. Click. And Vince is going to Hogan, going, Hoaxer, he's balking. He's not, I'm not going to the ring. You know, Hogan Jones, I ain't going to the ring if you don't want to do it.
Right.
He'll be damned and you're going to send my ass out there to get my head torn off. And he wouldn't commit. And so that day, we get to the building like 11 o'clock in the morning. And as soon as I walk in, Andre grabs him. We're playing cribbage. And I've got him down like 20 bucks. What a big deal. And it's 3:30 in the afternoon. Vince is going, Andre, please. I'm playing cards. Golf. You know? And, of course, Vince is going behind Andre and looking at me going, right. And I'm like, Andre, I got a really good juice. Sit down. And Vince is doing this. Yeah, I'm the way I go here, you know? And he worked them until the bell rang. And he yelled at Hogan, go for the ring! He still hadn't told him he was going to do it. And he waited until he got in the ring to tell Hogan, it's okay.
And Hogan, so Hulk always talks, but he didn't know the finish until he
did not
the
know
ring.
The finish until he's in the ring, man. And he was scared to fucking, and I get it, man. I mean, he sat on me one time in the corner and just crushed me. And then my shoulder, I thought I was having a heart attack. My shoulders were starting doing the, you know, quaking and shit. And I'm like, fuck, man. And on my side, man, I went numb. And the referee comes over to him, and Andre's laughing. And the guy says, why are you laughing, Andre? He goes, I'm farting. I counted the seconds. And, it was right at 40 seconds. You know? It was a it was a very eerie sound. Once he got off of me, I looked at my shoulder and I had like a wine stain, you know?
Jake.
I love you guys. God bless.
Hey, thank you, Jake. Listen. Jake the Snake Roberts.